So my presentation is called Unsticking Your Brain, and before I started, I wanted to say that I am really terrible at coming up with titles for things, and so a person in the audience, another social worker named Angela Ayoub, helped me with this title, and I want to call her out and embarrass her because that's what I do best. So she's over there, and she helped me with this. Hey, it worked. Okay, so before I get into talking about OCD and what it is and how we treat it, I want to talk a little bit about who I am and what I do. So I'm a psychotherapist. We use evidence-based treatments. I work at the University of Michigan Health System. I'm a clinical social worker, and I wanted to just dispel some common misconceptions about social work before I get rolling, because I hear these all the time. I hear these at every Thanksgiving dinner and at every Christmas and Easter. That we take people's kids away. So my whole family are like numbers and math people, which is totally foreign to me. And so they all think that I like go into the inner city and remove people's children, and that's my job. And so that's not what I do, although there are some people who do that. Social workers do a lot of things. We're actually pretty badass. We can do a number of different things. We have specialized training. I happen to do psychotherapy, but there are social workers in a variety of settings. So the idea that we aren't specialized is also not true. We're all, me and my colleagues here are specialized, we're trained in mental health, and that's what we work with. When we do therapy, a lot of people think that to see a therapist that they're automatically like a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and that's not the case. A social worker can do therapy. Another thing I hear, at every holiday dinner is that my work is depressing, how do you do it? I could never do what you do. And it's really not that depressing. I mean, yes, I see and hear about horrible things, but my work is actually quite fulfilling, and I love it. And so while there are things that are really emotionally draining, overall, it's very fulfilling and rewarding. And you will sense a theme with my presentation is that there are a lot of animal pictures, so just get used to that right off the bat, because animals are my thing. That is not my animal, because you will see my animals at the end, and they are far superior to these animals. So, what is OCD? So before I get started talking about OCD, I want to talk about OCD and how it's really common to hear in popular culture people say things like, I'm so OCD because I use a lot of hand sanitizer, or I like my environment really neat and clean. And okay, but that's not OCD. That's not clinical OCD. And it was actually quite hard for me to find visuals for this presentation, because everything that came up on Google for OCD was like BuzzFeed's things that will satisfy your OCD, and it was like a really smooth jar of peanut butter. Like, that's not what we're talking about here. But this is a comic that I found by an anonymous illustrator, and I thought this was a really good representation of what OCD is like for people. And it says, this is what it's like in my head all the time, and there are thoughts in there like, you'll hurt everybody, and you need to keep them safe, and stop thinking about this, and different random numbers. And so OCD is debilitating, and it's really distressing for people with this illness. And so it's not like the things you might hear about in popular culture, like, I'm so OCD, oh my gosh. So just remember, like, when you're talking about your own little quirks and tendencies, that you probably don't, you might not necessarily have clinical OCD, and so be careful what you say. So OCD, or obsessive compulsive disorder, is a chronic disorder in which the person has uncontrollable, reoccurring, disturbing, and uncomfortable thoughts or images. And these are the obsessions. And those are followed up by the behaviors or mental rituals, the compulsions, that they feel the urge to repeat over and over again. So the cycle of OCD is on the left, and it starts with the obsession. A person has an obsession, and I'll talk about common examples of obsessions in a minute. They feel anxiety or discomfort. They do their compulsion, sometimes over and over again, and they get a sense of temporary relief. And while that feels better, it's actually making the OCD worse, because they're giving in to the OCD. And so I'll talk about how to reverse that in a bit, but I just wanted to go over the cycle of OCD and talk more about the symptoms. So this is the diagnostic criteria for OCD, and this comes from the DSM, which stands for the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which is obnoxious to say. And it is basically like a recipe book for mental health disorders, and it's what we use when we're diagnosing people, which if they meet certain criteria for a certain amount of time, they have a certain mental health disorder. So in the DSM, it describes OCD as follows. So there are obsessions, which, like I said, are repetitive, persistent thoughts that are intrusive and inappropriate and cause anxiety and distress. And then the person attempts to ignore or suppress them or to neutralize them with some other thought or action. And that's the compulsions. The compulsions are repetitive behaviors like hand washing or checking, or mental acts and rituals like praying and counting that the person feels driven to perform in response to their obsessions. Compulsions are aimed at reducing distress or preventing some dreaded event or situation from happening, but they're not connected in a realistic way with what they're designed to neutralize or prevent. And they're excessive, clearly excessive. They take up a lot of time. So I just wanted to break down the diagnostic criteria. These are common, I hope you can read this, because actually this is quite small, but these are common obsessions and compulsions, and I'll go through them. Common obsessions that people experience are contamination is one I think that people hear a lot about in popular culture, this fear of bodily fluids and diseases and having germs or contaminants on them. Losing control obsessions, so obsessions about harming others or themselves, violent images, offending other people. Over-responsibility, so being responsible for something bad happening. Symmetry and exactness, so oftentimes people will say that they have this need for this just right feeling, but they can't quite describe it. Unwanted sexual thoughts, so fear of being homosexual, forbidden or perverse images or obsessions involving children or incest. And then religious obsessions, scrupulosity, is fear of offending God or a higher power, and this concern with morality and what's right or wrong. Some common compulsions that we see are washing and cleaning, so excessive hand washing, showering, toilet routines, cleaning objects in the environment, using barriers to prevent contamination, so things like the classic paper towel on the bathroom door, checking to make sure that you didn't harm yourself or other people, and to ensure that nothing bad has happened or that no mistake was made, repeating, so things like rewriting, rereading, retracing your steps, repeating things a certain number of times, and repetitive body movements, mental compulsions like praying, counting, neutralizing thoughts, reassurance seeking, so confessing, asking excessive questions, and then ordering and arranging, just trying to get that just right feeling. So some examples from my own, so these are all de-identified examples, and these are, I've kind of mashed a bunch of patients together so that they can't be identified. But one example is a case who had contamination concerns and was always felt like really sticky or dirty and avoided any contaminants, anything sticky. He had his own set of plasticware and plastic forks and knives and cups at home. He wouldn't use the family dishes, the family cups and knives. He felt like they were contaminated forever because his family members' germs had been on them. And so he had these contamination concerns. He would wash his hands a lot, excessively. His hands were like dry and bleeding and cracked often. He'd wash his hands for 10 minutes, which doesn't sound like a long time, but it's really long for washing your hands. And he had a specific hand washing routine. So like up to the elbows, and you had to get in between each finger two times, that kind of thing. Another patient I had obsession, violent obsessions, and so thoughts that she was going to hurt her mom or her pet dog, and so she was doing a lot of reassurance seeking. She was asking her dad, are they okay? She was going doubling back and checking to make sure she didn't hurt anybody. She was avoiding being with her dog, which was really distressing for her, and so this was really hard for her because she lived with them, and they were the content of her obsessions, and so it was quite debilitating for her. So those are some examples of different obsessions and compulsions that I've seen in my own practice. So my number one skill in life is making Harry Potter references. And okay, who here likes Harry Potter? Raise your hand. Okay, if you did not raise your hand, get out, because like, what is wrong with you? Go, as soon as I'm done, I need you to go home and read the books. The movies do not count. So in Harry Potter, so this is an analogy I use to externalize OCD and make it seem like the bully or the bad guy so that people don't blame themselves. And in Harry Potter, as some of you may know, there are three unforgivable curses, which are basically curses that are illegal and used by the bad guys. And they're really bad. And one of them is called the Imperius Curse or Imperium. So when this curse is cast on someone, it places the victim completely under the caster's control. So it can be resisted with tons of strength and willpower, but it's very hard. And so I like to use analogies like this when working with patients. I mostly work with kids and teens. because it's helpful to externalize OCD and think of it as a bully. Think of it like someone's casting the imperious curse on you and you've lost control. A lot of people don't realize that this really feels uncontrollable for people, and it's so hard to resist these urges. So I like to use analogies like this to help explain things. So these are some statistics and some possible causes of OCD. So we know that OCD can occur at any age, and that about 1 in 100 adults, or like 2 to 3 million in the United States, currently have it, and about 1 in 200 or 500,000 kids or teens have OCD. Found in all ethnic groups and equally in both men and women. And there are a couple of associated conditions. So these are just conditions that we often see in conjunction with OCD. So depression, anxiety disorders, trichotillomania, which is compulsively pulling one's hair out or eyebrows out, and eyelashes, and tic disorders. So the one that people think of most commonly is Tourette's, but there are the spectrum of tic disorders that we often see. The possible causes, the short answer is that it's unclear and we still need to, we have a lot to learn. But we know that brain chemistry plays a role, specifically certain neurotransmitters. So serotonin, there may be serotonin abnormalities in the brains of people with OCD. Also genetics, people can inherit the tendency to get OCD from their ancestors, and life experiences. So for example, some people might have religious obsessions and compulsions. And we know that if people aren't ever introduced to the concept of God or a religion, they don't have these obsessions and compulsions. So oftentimes, when we get these are people who are actively involved in their religion. Also, things like the obsessions about getting AIDS, contaminating and getting AIDS. So before the AIDS crisis happened, this wasn't a big thing. We didn't see this, and this happened again. But that's an example of how life experiences can play a role in how OCD happens in a person. So, now that you know a little bit more about OCD, I want to talk about how OCD is treated. And OCD is treated best with an evidence-based practice called Exposure and Response Prevention, or ERP for short. There are a lot of acronyms in mental health. It never ends. So, the first step, so I'll go over the rationale for ERP eventually, but I want to break it down into steps because I find that that's easiest. The first step in ERP is exposure. So this is, do you see the theme? The animals, they're contaminated. Exposure is doing the opposite of what your OCD tells you to do. So you're standing up to the OCD bully, and this makes the OCD weaker. So you're purposely confronting the things that cause you the anxiety. You're purposely confronting the content of your obsessions. So if someone is afraid of germs, OCD is going to tell them stay away from contaminated things, and clean and wash as quickly as you can. And this sounds like it makes sense, but it actually helps the OCD get stronger because they're giving in to the OCD. So as an exposure, the therapist, me, might have this patient purposely touch contaminated objects. This is the fun part. Things like doorknobs, toilet seats, bathroom floors, garbage bins, and worse. Just to get them exposed to the content of their obsessions. Step two is response prevention. So that's the RP. So when you're doing exposure, you're purposely confronting more dogs. I know that's what you're laughing at, Angela. So you're purposely confronting things that cause anxiety, and this makes patients want to perform their compulsions and rituals more. So response prevention is working hard to avoid doing the compulsion and the ritual. The anxiety and the fear and the discomfort will get worse before it gets better, but that's the point. For example, someone with contamination concerns who's been exposed to dirt and germs, who's like touched a toilet seat or something, does not get to wash their hands for an extended period of time. So they're with me in my office and we're just sitting being contaminated together for a long time. And they get really anxious. And maybe I do too, but I don't tell them that. So, exposure plus response prevention. So the key to successful therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy for OCD, is to use these in conjunction. You're using exposure and response prevention together. The patient and the therapist work together to design their exercises, so that way it's collaborative and the patient has some say in what they're going to be doing. And it makes sense, it addresses their symptoms. If patients complete these exercises every day, it's likely that they're going to make significant progress. But they're encouraged to work hard, to embrace discomfort, and to tolerate the anxiety, but I'm not going to make them do something that they're absolutely petrified to do. Like, we're not going to start with licking the toilet seat. We're going to start, like,
on the lower end of the spectrum.
So it works best with a variety of challenges and in a range of locations and situations, and it helps, this is the most important part, it helps patients learn that they can tolerate anxiety and discomfort, and that this imagined disastrous consequence that they think is going to happen is not going to happen. So it's all about learning to tolerate anxiety. So a question that sometimes comes up is, why not just talk therapy? Why can't you just talk it out? And so I have a personal example. So when I was growing up, I was terrified of vomits, other people's vomit, mine was fine. And when my brother, who is a frequent vomiter for some reason, would throw up, he would think it was hilarious, and I would leave the house, and this was just like a regularly occurring thing. I was terrified of vomit, it was awful. So no amount of talking about my fear of people's puke was gonna make it any better. The only thing that made it better was when I went to college and I roomed with this like Catholic schoolgirl who went crazy and was lots of drinking, and I was like, I found myself being exposed to holding her hair back while she puked all the time. And so I'm still not like in love with other people's vomit, but I can tolerate it. I've learned to tolerate it. I've habituated to this thing that caused me such distress. And so that's just a personal example about why talk therapy isn't gonna cut it. I could talk about my fear of vomit all day when I was a kid, but that I was still gonna avoid it like the plague, so that didn't help. Exposure to it did help. So that's why if you have a vomit phobia, just go to college and you'll be fine. So, like I said, through ERP, the patients eventually become accustomed to their fears. It's a process called habituation. And about 70% of people who go through it get a reduction in their symptoms. It's evidence-based, like I said before, and one of the reasons that talk therapy isn't as effective is because it can quickly turn into reassurance seeking, and that in itself is a compulsion, and it can exacerbate the symptoms of OCD. That's why ERP is better, even though it sounds really mean. So this is an example of, should have made my font bigger, sorry. This is an example of a sample ERP hierarchy. So this is what I work together with the patients to create at the beginning of treatment. And so we rate anxiety and distress on a SUDS scale. SUDS stands for subjective units of distress. So it's a 1 to 10 scale, and inevitably someone's gonna argue with me and say that 1 is the highest, not the lowest, and it has to be that way. Okay, fine. But 10 is the highest. So so for this person, it goes from the bottom up. So this is a contamination hierarchy. And so they're starting with touching a doorknob without washing their hands, touching a trash can without washing their hands, touching the floor, the home sink, a public sink, flushing the toilet at home, standing near a public toilet, flushing a public toilet, putting their hand in a public toilet without washing. This one's my favorite one. Dipping a rag in a toilet with toilet water and carrying it around all day, and then like occasionally they're like feeling in their pocket like, oh yeah, I'm contaminated. And putting toilet water on their body. Which was a 10 for this person, so we did not start there. But that's an example of a hierarchy, and we do these things and work our way up. And as we work our way up, their tolerance of the anxiety and distress gets better, and they start to feel better, and the OCD starts to be less of a jerk. Another hierarchy is for a person with violent thoughts. So they're cooking with household chemicals nearby. So this person was worried that she was going to poison everybody because she liked to bake or cook or something. And so she had Drano on the counter, and she would kind of like look away and like pretend she was pouring it in and compromise her sensory input, and maybe she poured it in, but maybe she didn't. And so she was enhancing her sense of doubt. Reading a violent narrative repeatedly, having violent thoughts pop up like in the reminders on your phone, like you're gonna kill your mom, you know, every like 15 minutes, things like that. Listening to a narrative, violent thoughts. This is my best idea ever. Violent thoughts on a pet's collar. So like the initials of the violent thoughts. So like if it's like, I'm gonna kill my mom, you do the initials of the thought and your pet's always with you, and so you always think about it. Posting violent thoughts around the house, listening to the narrative while walking with the dog, chopping vegetables, using a knife while listening to the violent narrative, and walking around the house with a knife. So this is the person who lived with her. The content of her obsessions was her mom and her dog. And so walking around the house with a knife was really distressing to her. But it's important to note that this isn't an impulse control thing. These are not violent people or criminals. We've never had a person with these violent thoughts actually act on them. They hate these thoughts. They don't want them there. They want them to go away. So that's why we use ERP, and we trust that you know, nothing bad is going to happen. And then this person was not allowed to check or seek reassurance from people. Like, well, did I hit my mom, or did I stab my mom, or is everyone okay? She just had to sit with the anxiety and learn how to tolerate it. So, if you want more information about OCD, there's a lot of information out there, but these are my references. And I'm happy to have you contact me. These are my, this is where I thank my, like, academy, my people. So this is Phoebe and Boo, and they are, without them, none of this would be possible. And so they are the superior animals that I was talking about earlier. And so, yeah, they're great. And that's my contact information, so you're welcome to reach out and contact me.